B-Pod Studios.
Gargano and Mertitus Middays.
Joel Embiid put out a tweet, by the way, 15 hours ago. He said, "Hell of a season. Proud of my guys, and I appreciate all the support you guys give us all season long. Extremely disappointed and fell short of our goal, but this is the motivation I needed, and best believe I'll be back even better and stronger. Hashtag the process." Now, he also changed his, what is that called?
The AV. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
He used his crying face as his Avi. What is it, Avi?
Avi, Avi, I don't care. It's a photo.
Yeah, so he's embracing the crying. It's like the crying Jordan face with Joel Embiid. I think he's doing that just to kind of troll people because I know some people have a problem with it. But still, you know, he said this is the motivation he needed to be the best. So we'll see. Well, you know, it's easy to say you're going to do the right things in an offseason. It's another thing to do it. And the proof will be in the pudding come next year. If he comes in better shape, if he follows the right nutrition and conditioning throughout the season.
Well, what does your gut tell you? Do you think he does it? Because I do.
I do, too. I really do. I think he's a big-time competitor.
Like, he says he's the most dominant player in the league, right? He says that stuff, and then he has these bad games. I think he truly wants to be the best player that ever played in the NBA. Like, I think he wants to be the best, and he's going to work to be the best.
Yeah, I think he understands the history of the NBA because he studies it. He, you know, we talked about the YouTube hole, rabbit holes he goes down, and you know the respect he has for guys like Hakeem and the greats and Shaq that have come before him. He watches those videos and tries to emulate things that they've done. And I think that he's a motivated guy. And I hope so. I hope he comes back in tremendous conditioning and comes back and does the right things next year and is available and the team does the right things and his load management so that come playoff time, he can be able to go through the four rounds and the war that will be the NBA playoffs. Because that's what it's going to come down to. That's what determines success for the Sixers going forward. You don't need to be the number one seed in the Eastern Conference and win 59 or 60 games. That's not going to determine success. How far they go in the playoffs is what's going to determine success. Now, look, I'm not saying the season for the Sixers was a failure because it wasn't a failure. I'm not ready to put the label on the season that it was a success. Provolone Joe tweets and he says, "Stop using the logic of how a season ends and what position you're in. Is every Eagle season a failure now if they don't win a Super Bowl?" No, but you got to understand, there's always an arc to every team and what they're accomplishing and where they're on the way. Some teams are on the way down at times. And you don't expect them to outdo what they did the year before or win more games or go further in the playoffs. You recognize that they're a team that is not on the rise, but therefore on the fall. You hope the GM makes some moves and they can extend it and keep a window open where they can compete for a title. The Eagles are a team with Carson Wentz and the additions they made this year that they're on the rise again. Last year, Wentz got hurt again, and they had to deal with the ramifications of that. And Alshon dropped them, whatever. But no, it's much more complex to determine success or failure than just looking at their end result. I don't look at the regular season number. They won less games than the year before. I don't look at that. I look at the fact that they didn't get further in the playoffs and that Ben Simmons did not develop a shot and Joel Embiid was scattered in the sense of his availability and viability because he was sick or he was dealing with the tendonitis or dealing with injuries along the way. I get it. The big man's going to have injuries. But I'm not ready to put the rubber stamp of success label next to the Sixers 2018-19 season at this moment. Plus the big variable of trading to get Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, and we don't know for sure that they're staying.
All right, so let me ask you something, because you're talking about individuals and you're putting it with the team. Would you call Ben Simmons' season alone a success or a failure because he didn't have a jump shot?
I'm not going to say it was if you want to say failure because he didn't progress, then okay. But I'll just say it was flat from the year before.
But he did progress. All his season numbers were higher this year than they were last year. I mean, he was an all-star. This year.
Yeah, but the key element, Andrew, is that he didn't come back with a shot at all. That's the thing that limits him in the playoffs. And we want him to be more aggressive and attack the rim. And we saw that in a couple of occasions in the playoffs, and we saw it in the regular season. And there's games where he puts up numbers during the regular season as well. But if he didn't develop any form of a shot, There was no, there wasn't that much growth there to elevate his game to the next level.
I still saw growth this year. I still saw growth this year out of Ben Simmons.
I agree with that, but I'm not saying. But the thing, the area that he needs to grow to make him a legit threat and great player in this league is to have a shot and have the willingness to take it. He took less shots this year. He didn't take any shots outside of 12 feet in the playoffs. None. How's that possible in year two?
Well, it shouldn't be possible, but he had the guys around him. It wasn't like last year where you had Covington and TJ McConnell playing with you. I mean, this year he had guys like Tobias and Butler and Redick and Embiid. When Embiid wasn't in the game, when Embiid didn't play that game against the Nets, Ben Simmons, I get it, it's the Nets, but whatever, it's a playoff game. He scored 31 points in that game
without a
jump shot.
And he did that the year prior on occasion as well, where because he's so good athletically and he can get to the rim and he can be a dominant force out there without a shot is incredible. But imagine when he adds it. Would they have been better had he had a shot this year? An outside?
Yes.
Would defenses have treated them differently?
Yes, of course.
So there you go. I'm just not ready to say that it was a success because they didn't get past where they got the year before. You know what I mean? Like you said, like, was the Flyer season a success? They didn't even make the playoffs, but did they find a goalie? Does that make it a success?
No.
No,
they failed as a team.
Yeah, I'm looking at individual players. I'm not saying were failures or didn't have success this year. I'm just saying the all-encompassing team aspect of it, they didn't go beyond where they went the year before. So I can't put the stamp of success next to it.
But when my expectations were a second-round elimination, which they were, and they got to...
Why did you come in with that expectation? Once they got Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris, was that still your expectation?
Yeah, after I looked at what the Raptors had. Now, I'll admit, once the Game 3 happened, I thought the Sixers were going to go to the NBA Finals. After Game 3, when they beat the Raptors the way they did, and then I expected them to win Game 4 at home, I didn't expect them to clam up like they did in Game 4 and then get crushed in Game 5. Then, of course, my expectations went back down. But before that, I expected Finals. And they didn't reach the Finals. I get that. But I'm not calling this season a failure just because they didn't reach the Finals.
Again, I'm not calling this season a failure. Have you heard me say that? Have I said it's a failure?
No,
I haven't said that.
You haven't said failure, but if you're saying something's not a success, then what is it? How is it not a failure?
It doesn't mean it's a failure. It just means it didn't take the next step. A failure would be them not making the playoffs or getting bounced by the Nets.
Then what would you call it? What's the word that you would
purgatory.
Call it? Okay.
You know what I mean? It's the middle area.
I'll take this purgatory than the eighth seed purgatory they were before the process.
Well, I agree with that because it looks like they're a team that's on the rise. And you have two young players, and in the NBA, young players don't win right away. They don't win titles. We've seen it throughout history. Kobe, Shaq, you talk with Michael Jordan. All it takes time for they're kids when they come into the league. And you can't win an NBA title when you're a kid and be the centerpiece of a team. But it doesn't mean it was a failure. And again, we saw great things. We saw some great things this year. Brett Brown, the job that he did in the playoffs. The fact that TJ stayed on the bench for a couple of those games is incredible. 610-632-0975. Here's the poll on at 975 Middays. Brought to you by Roofing Nation. Get a brand new roof for as low as $7,900 plus free gutters. Call Roofing Nation at 833-4NATION or visit roofingnation.com. With the Eagles, Sixers, and Phillies all being, quote, close, how many of the three are you expecting to reach the championship in their respective sport? Phillies 2019, Eagles this coming season, and the Sixers next fall, winter, spring. Right now, 45% of the people are expecting one of those three teams to reach a final and reach the championship level. 24% say they're expecting two. That's where I voted. 19% say zero, and 12% right now say all three will be legitimate contenders for a championship in their sport. Either this season for the Phillies, next season for the Eagles and the Sixers. 6-1-0.
Real quick, for the people that are voting one, I'm actually interested to hear who that one team is. Is everybody just automatically assuming the Sixers and we're just forgetting the Eagles? The Eagles are a good team. They did it again with their backup quarterback last year in the playoffs. One drop away, right? You know, if Alshon Jeffrey makes that catch, they probably end up winning that game and they go to the NFC Championship game. So the people that are voting one on the Twitter poll. Which one?
If I'm banking on one, if I say one, which one is it? Or if I'm ranking them in order of likeliness for me, the number one team I have there is the Eagles because of the moves they made this offseason. Number two to me is the Sixers, but that's still pending Butler and Tobias come back and that Elton Brand upgrades the bench, maybe has J.J. Redick coming off the bench and how that plays out. Number three would be the Phillies because I think next year is more likely than this year. That would be the order I would give. Is that the order you would have, Andrew? Eagles, Sixers, Phillies?
No, I'm going to go Sixers first.
You can go Sixers first.
Yeah, because if they bring these guys back, right, they're gonna figure out a way to fix their bench, right? I mean, people that were upset with the way Elton Brand put together the bench, he did it during the middle of the season.
Yeah.
I expect and I hope that during the offseason, a full offseason, he can find some guys on low-level contracts to be good bench players for the Sixers this year.
All right, well, we'll talk about that with Tom Moore from Calkins Media coming up, and he'll give us his thoughts on how this offseason is going to play out for the Sixers, and we'll ask him the question, was the 2018-19 season a success for the Sixers, even though they didn't get past the round in the playoffs that they got to the year prior against the Boston Celtics? 610-632-0975. We're coming to you live at Downingtown Country Club, the Mike Miss Open, right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Gargano and Mertitus Middays.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
11 o'clock hour brought to you by Golden Nugget Jewelers, where Philly gets engaged.
Live at Downingtown Country Club, it is the Midday Show. Anthony be on for Mike this afternoon. Coming up 2 to 7, actually. Cuz's Corner wrapped in right in there as well. And joining us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline. And you're going to have to punch this up for me. I think I just lost. Oh, I got it back. I got my call screener back. Tom Moore joining us from the Bucks County Courier Times, the Intelligencer, and Burlington County Times on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tom, how you doing today?
All right. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing good, man. I know it's a busy time in Philadelphia sports. The Sixers just wrapped up their season on Sunday. You're covering the Phillies as well. We'll dip into both of those with you. But let's start with the Sixers and the defeat that happened on Sunday, the dagger by Kawhi Leonard. The Sixers were in that game, had a chance to win it, Tom, but ultimately weren't able to advance past that second round. But when you look at that playoff series against the Raptors, what was it that cost them in that series where they had a 2-1 lead?
Honestly, I really think, Jason, it comes down to, you know, Joel Embiid not being 100%. If he's 100%, they win game 4. You're up 3-1. I like your chances to win one of the last 3 games. There are certainly other factors that you can point to, but I really think that's the number one, and I think that'll be a huge thing going forward. You know, that he's limited in terms of his minutes. He's limited what he can do. People say, why wasn't he down low in game 7? And I asked Brett Brown that during the Nets series when he was playing on the perimeter. And his answer, and I think it's true, he's so, you know, it's much easier to run 70 feet each trip down the court than 85 feet. So you stand at the 3-point line and you run dribble handoffs and pick and rolls and things like that rather than getting on the block and getting the ball. And I really think that is a factor. And I think if he's in shape, healthy for the first time next year in the playoffs, I think, you know, again, assuming Butler and Harris come back, I think that, you know, they have a really good chance to take the next step.
Tom, one of the things for the Sixers to move forward next year is contingent on Embiid's health. We know he's got the tendonitis in the knee. How much of a factor is that going to be with him kind of nagging going forward? Getting lighter, you know, carrying less weight obviously will help that situation. And do you believe that he's going to do the right things nutrition-wise and getting his body ready for another NBA season next year?
Yeah, I mean, he really needs to. He says, you know, he says he will. He says he'll come back. But, I mean, I think the Sixers also made a bit of a tactical error. He played in 54 of the first 58 games. He wanted to play. He wants to play every day. But I think the wear and tear was a big factor in that tendonitis. I think you might see him, like Kawhi Leonard, not playing both games of a back-to-back, you know, next year or that on a regular basis. That happened. So instead of, you know, he plays in 65 games, you know, or whatever, instead of 72. And you saw, you know, Kawhi Leonard, I mean, but he never looks like he's tired. He never looks, you can never tell he's been on the court for 45 minutes or taken 30-some shots or whatever. But, yes, he needs to. And you're right. Even if he's 12 to 15 pounds lighter, that's less wear, less, you know, strain on the knees and the ankles and the hips, the joints, every step he takes. And I think that is significant.
Yeah, no question about it. Tom Moore with us on the Comcast Business Hotline from the Bucks County Courier Times. Tom, Ben Simmons, that's always a talking point when it comes to the Sixers. He came back this season without that jump shot or a willingness to try it. When he goes into this offseason, that's front and center on what Sixers fans want to see, an improvement in his game. What does he have to do to come back with some semblance of a jump shot and a willingness to take it?
Yeah, I mean, he has to just shoot more of them in the off season and so on. I mean, Brett Brown says he worked on it a lot, but clearly he didn't have the confidence to take it in the game. A little bit in the regular season, but in the playoffs, I believe the last series, if I'm not mistaken, Toronto, he took one shot beyond 10 feet.
Yeah.
And the average shot was about 3 feet. So he's got to get all the way to the rim. And you also realize if Jimmy Butler's back and Jimmy Butler has the ball in his hands, what is Ben Simmons' role in the half-court offense? You put him at the three-point line, they're not going to guard him because he's not a threat. So if he could just take a 12-footer even, I'm not talking about a three-pointer, but a mid-range shot, which is going to be available, take it and make it, you know, with some consistency.
Tom, do you ever recall a player, player in the NBA, that have a reluctance to shoot at the level that Ben Simmons does?
A good player, you're saying ask for another one?
No. With Ben Simmons, there's just such a reluctance to even take a jump shot. Can you recall any player? You've covered the league a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a special skill set, but the reluctance is overwhelming of him not willing to take the shots.
I mean, like when Jordan and Magic came in the league, they weren't great jump shooters. They would take it some, but Jordan's game really until year seven was just attack the rim. Go to the foul line, you know, uses jumping ability. So on a Magic, too, was not, you know, but they worked and they got better and better and better. But none of them were as reluctant, I would say, as he is. I can't think of an all-star player. I mean, Rodman never shot the ball, but he was
he's an all-defensive player and a rebounder.
Defensive rebounding freak, exactly.
Tom, they decided to bring Brett Brown back. Joshua Harris said his job was never in jeopardy. Whether you believe that or not, maybe another story. But the return of Brett Brown next season for his, I guess, seventh season as the Sixers head coach, how much of that is going to be a factor in Jimmy Butler returning or Tobias Harris re-signing with the Sixers?
Yeah, those are good questions. I think Harris will be back. I mean, it just seems like that's logical. I think Butler, you know, is more likely to be here than elsewhere. But, I mean, if he really wants to go somewhere else or go to a different place, and he's willing to, you know, he can sign for 4 years and $140 million somewhere else, and here's 5 years and $188 or $190 million. That's a big, huge difference to you or I, but for somebody who's made a lot of money and, you know, wants to be somewhere, he doesn't have to come back. But clearly, you know, they could use them. I mean, you have to realize, too, when you look at their team offensively, it's not... I mean, wants to run pick and rolls and isolation plays. Simmons wants to run. Embiid wants to play half court. So it's, you know, Brett Brown's really got trying to kind of, all right, we'll do this time. We'll do this. We'll run more pick and rolls. We'll run more dribble handoffs. And, you know, it's not... there's a little bit of a comfort level there, but it's not like they have similar skill sets. And it's just plug this guy in and it works, you know, automatically. So that's definitely kind of like a work in progress, and something that, you know, it should be better as they go forward. But as I said, the pieces don't fit exactly the way you'd like them to.
Tom, when you look at Jimmy Butler, and he has some things to say at his exit interview, his press conference, and, you know, some great things to say about his teammates, Brett Brown, about the fans, the organization. But he didn't go all the way and say this is where he wants to be. Do you think that this is a place that he wants to be, that he wants to sign that long-term contract and put his roots down here in Philadelphia with a chance to win a title?
I think probably, but I think he's also 29. He knows this is his last big contract. You know, he wants to make sure that, you know, what he wants and, you know, see what else is out there, what other situations, you know, could be available, what would be the best fit, you know, for him. I mean, clearly, you know, they love him. He's a Philly-type player. He's a guy that's not afraid of the big moment. He led them in scoring in the series against, you know, the Raptors. And not only scoring, he led them in offensive rebounds. Yeah. I mean, he does what you need. He has a knack more than anybody on that team to give you what you need to win. Sometimes it's scoring, sometimes it's distributing or whatever. But, yeah, I think it's more likely he comes back, but I don't think it's a slam dunk.
We heard J.J. Redick say that he knows he's not the number one priority for the Sixers this offseason, the piece to get done first. He's been here a couple of years, has been a good player for the Sixers. Does he return next year to this team as well?
Well, I heard what you said, and I agree 100%, Jason. Ideally, he'd be like the first guy off the bench, a shooter off the bench. Mm-hmm. The problem is now, who's going to be your starter? The one guy you had on the roster that could have possibly handled that role is Landry Shamet, who you traded to the, you know, to the Clippers with two first-round picks to get Tobias Harris. I think Zaire Smith is probably not ready yet to think he could step in and, you know, be a consistent three-point shooter. He's a good defender, but I don't think he's ready yet. So, and if they do re-sign those guys, you know, you have a cap issue and you can re-sign your own guys. So I think it's more likely that Redick would come back probably as a starter, although, as you said, if they could get somebody else who's maybe a little more athletic, maybe they could get somebody to agree for a mid-level exception or, you know, to play for a little bit less than market value. You know, perhaps they could do that, and I think that would really help because they need a big guy off the bench as the plus-minus numbers, you know, with Embiid on and off the floor against the Raptors clearly show, and they also could use a scorer off the bench, in my opinion.
Yeah, no question. Tom, last question in regards to the Sixers. I got a Phillies question for you, but when you look at this past season, they end up going out in the second round as they did the year prior, albeit this year in seven games, and a miracle shot from Kawhi sends them home to the offseason. The year prior, they lost in five to Boston and looked outclassed in that series. Was this season a success for the Sixers?
I think, you know, I would call it slight progress, Jason, but, you know, if you told me they would do that at the beginning of the season, I would say, yes, it's progress. But when you trade for Jimmy Butler in November and Tobias Harris in February, I think the expectations were raised. So I don't think you can say it's a success. I think it's give them encouragement that, you know, I think the Raptors were a very good team, and I think that such an even series is encouraging. But I think, you know, they need to make, assuming they bring the guys back, they need to make a move and at least make the conference finals. You know, who knows what happens Golden State if Durant leaves, so on. You know, that their window is this coming season. And I think, you know, to be a success next year, they need to take a clear other step forward. I don't think this was a clear success. I think it was, like I said, slight progress, but I wouldn't call it a success, no.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. It's a great way to put it about progress. Question for you about the Phils real quick. I saw you tweet out the batting order for today. Bryce Harper batting in the two hole today. What's your thoughts on what the Phillies have been so far this season? You know, sitting in first place in the NL East, Harper hasn't really gotten his average, obviously, is not very good. He's been dramatic. He's been good in the field. But overall, he's not off to a great start, but the Phillies as a team still are.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, the expectations really increased with that getting off to such a great start and the offense, the way they hit the ball early on. I think the fact that, you know, the pitching, you know, remains a question mark. And I think, you know, personally, I would give Harper a day off. I know Gabe Kapler says he might play all 162. But I think putting him at the two hole, maybe just try something different. Sometimes a little switch, you know, in hockey, you put somebody on a different line sometimes and it's inexplicable. All of a sudden they break out, they do more things, they're more comfortable. And maybe in the two hole, you know, he gets a couple hits, he feels better about himself and kind of jump starts, you know, stretches where he's capable of really carrying a team.
Well, yeah, he's going to be a big part of it, their success this season, and in first place right now in the National League East. Tom, hey, we appreciate the time today. We'll be reading you on the Bucks County Courier Times, also the Intelligencer and the Burlington County Times. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks anytime. Take care, Jason.
There he is, Tom Moore on the Comcast Business Hotline. You can give him a follow on Twitter, at Tom Moore Philly. Check out his work there as well. 610-632-0975. He put an answer to that question that I have about the success of the Sixers season. Great answer. It was slight progress, but not ready to go success because the expectation going into the season was so different because you didn't have Jimmy Butler in the beginning of the season. You didn't have Tobias Harris. You know, expectations change when you add players. They change in a season. especially when you had two guys. You added Butler in November, and you had Tobias Harris at the deadline. Now, they didn't have Tobias for a tremendous amount of time, and the starters didn't play together a lot down the stretch. But I like the terminology he used. It was progress, but not necessarily success. 610-632-0975 is the number. Let's go to the man. Check it in from Jersey. T. Will on the Fanatic. What's up, T. Will?
What's going on, my brother?
I expected you to be out here golfing today, man.
Nah, man. I got to make some money, man. I can't make money on a golf course unless I'm playing against a bro.
Digging right into his pocket.
There you go. There you go. But, hey, man, listen. I got to agree with Sal Chunas, man. You can't say the season, you can't be in between success and failure. It's either a success or it's a failure. It's one or the other. I mean, being wishy-washy about the situation, you know, isn't a clear-cut answer. See, Tom Moore just gave you a clear-cut answer. He said it wasn't a success. Yes, expectations do change when you pick up players as Butler and Tobias Harris. Mm-hmm. And everyone's expectation was get past the second round because that's where we went last year. We got knocked out in the second round. Now, did the Sixers look a lot better this year in the second round? Absolutely, because they went to seven games and they get knocked out in five games. Did Brett Brown make adjustments? Yes. So making progress and in that situation is a successful thing because Brett Brown's coming back with another season under his belt. But as an overall expectation, once you got Butler and Tobias Harris, no, it's not a success. So you got to be definitive on saying either.
Well, what are you saying then? I don't even know what the hell you're saying. Was it a success or failure?
No, it was a failure. It was a failure because our expectations got raised once we made moves to get Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. But I have a lot of high hopes.
Okay, see? So there was like, so you agree with Tom? Like, I'm in this middle ground too, and I think you are, T. Will, because there were some things that
you
did
I'm not
see
in the
some success
ground.
Individually. Okay, so let's talk about, so individually, like you saw growth out of Brett Brown and the adjustments that he made, and they paid off. You saw some growth with players. Now, obviously, growth with the roster with those additions, and should these guys stay, and Butler and Tobias Harris, and how they move forward. But if you're talking about encapsulating the whole thing, and did they do better than they did last year, and did they meet or exceed expectations? They did not, so you're saying failure.
Yes, failure, okay. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
But they did show progress.
Yeah, absolutely they did.
Okay.
They showed us, as Sixers Nation, as Philadelphia United, they showed us that they can do it. They can do it. And if you really believe in this team, as I think you do, you think they could do it next season as well. As long as the core four comes back. As long as Harris comes back, as long as Butler comes back, you know, you get a healthy Embiid, and Ben Simmons does take another step forward, because I agree with Andrew there also. He did make progress. This team is going to be unstoppable, man. This team is going to be really, really good next season.
Well, you're right. They do need to bring that core four back, T-Will. The one thing, though, that they also need to do is they need to have a backup big for Embiid because he's not going to play. They're going to really manage his minutes next year and the amount of games that he plays so he doesn't get worn down and suffer from the tendonitis. Like Tom Moore brought up, he played 54 of the first 58 games. Also, they got to find a secondary ball hand, a guy to come off the bench that can shoot the three.
Yeah, they got to find someone off the bench that only shoot the three, but also handle the rock. They need a combo guard.
Yeah.
You know, they need someone that can control the floor and get everyone in the right position. And everyone knows we need a backup big. You know, that should be number one priority besides signing these players. Our 1A is in the offseason is going to find a backup for Embiid. You know, we got to find a backup for Embiid. We got to find a backup point guard, combo guard that can control our second unit. That was the damaging part about going into the last season. We didn't do anything to bolster our bench or improve our starting lineup. And that's why the Sixers started off so rocky. We went into last season the same way we ended the season before. And we played catch up. And that's what, and look what happened. When you play catch up, you don't have enough time. The players don't have enough time to gel. And it caught up to us and the shot fell, you know?
Yeah, no question. And thanks, T. Will. There's a lot of boxes to check for Elton Brand this offseason. The two most important are going to be Butler and Harris. They already made the first move, and that's bringing Brett Brown back. But then you got to find ways to fill out this roster and improve it from what it was last year. Is it a foregone conclusion that that's going to be possible? No, I don't think so. You got a lot of work to do. They got to find the right guys, fit them in their salary structure and get them here. While the four starters are imperative with Butler, Harris, Embiid, and Simmons, and that's the core of your team, if they're going to take the step forward, they need an improved bench. And I think some of us are making an assumption that that's going to be an easy thing to accomplish for Elton Brand. I don't know that it's easy. There's a lot of work to be done.
I mean, he did an okay job by making trades.
No,
you know what I mean?
Like, he did a good job.
He has an opportunity this summer to look at the list of free agents that would fit best with this team. That's why I have high expectations going into this offseason as well.
I agree with you, Andrew. I think he's a guy that knows what he's doing. I think he's a guy that's plugged in with agents, and this is an attractive location for free agents to come. It's a destination where they can come and they can win and they can contribute. So I think that that's certainly helped Elton Brand. But ultimately, you don't have a lot of control because it's the players that decide. And we'll see if he's able to accomplish and check a lot of boxes. Boy, he's got to check a lot, though.
Yes.
This is an offseason with a lot of variables.
One thing I think people forget about, and I just want to remind people of, he did a pretty good job cleaning up, and it really was a disaster. The disaster that Brett Brown put together.
Well, with Muscala,
Wilson Chandler, those mutts. Elton Brand was the one that got rid of them and then brought in better players that helped this team. I'm not saying they had the best bench in the NBA. We were ripping them all season. But Elton Brand cleaned up Brett Brown's mess.
Well, I thought that everybody was telling me at the time that it wasn't imperative that the Sixers hire a general manager right away. Wasn't that when I was complaining about that?
I remember that.
But he created a mess. And then Elton Brand had to come in and clean up the mess.
That's why you're Mr. NBA.
Damn right. 610-632-0975. Beautiful day here at Downingtown Country Club. The Mikey Miss Open presented by Corona Premium. Premium light beer for people looking for an elevated light beer experience. 2.6 grams of carbs and 90 calories. Got to open phone lines right now at 610-632-0975. Couple of questions for you. Was this Sixers season a success? Was it a failure or was it progress somewhere in between? You decide. 610-632-0975. And I'm going to re-roll out the notion of this being our year in regards to the Phillies, in regards to next Sixer season, and in regards to the Eagles season coming up this fall. 610-632-0975. Midday show live from Downingtown Country Club on 97.5 The Fanatic. But Jason Martinez here to tell you about the Rothenberg Law Firm. As sure most of you are aware, the Phillies, they made a big commitment to a certain outfielder this offseason. Commitment's important. And at the Rothenberg Law Firm, they know how important commitment is, especially when it comes to their clients and to being the best law firm in Philadelphia. Alan Rothenberg and his team, they're fully committed to fighting and, of course, winning for their clients and have been every single day for over 49 years. The Rothenberg Law Firm's commitment to protecting, fighting, and standing up for the injured people of Philadelphia has helped them build and grow their firm into the trusted household name it is today. So if you're injured and you want to win, make the commitment to winning and call the Rothenberg Law Firm. I know this to be true. They're not going to stop until they win for you. So here's the number, 1-800-624-8888. That's 1-800-624-8888. Or you can visit their website, injurylawyer.com. Again, the website, injurylawyer.com.
Gargano and Mertitis Middays.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Back live, Downingtown Country Club, Midday Show. Anthony filling in for
me
this afternoon. That's right. Beautiful day here today. And I'm talking to Tom Moore. He brought up something interesting. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard's a guy that they load management. They rest him. He doesn't play back-to-backs because you want him for the playoffs. He played like, I got to look at this number, 60, maybe 62 games this past season. Not out for injury, but out because of load management purposes. And it got me thinking, I was thinking about this because we're going to go into next year and Joel Embiid is going to be a guy where they're really going to monitor these things. And Embiid brought it up in his exit press conference too, that the back-to-backs, that he probably won't play in back-to-backs during the season. And they'll probably rest him a quarter of the season, about 20 games. He played 64 games this year. He played 54 of the first 58 games of this past season. But I'm looking at that, and I'm going, wait, that's, you know, if the best players, because you need them available for the postseason, the most important time, are going to miss roughly 25% of their team's games because of load management so that they are fresh for the playoffs. Isn't that a problem? Isn't that, you know, a league that's driven by stars? They're the star players are the reason why eyeballs go to the televisions and why people plunk down their money to buy a ticket and go see them play. And if there's a home and home and one of those games is home or back-to-back and one's home and one's away, the star player probably will sit for the road game because they want to please their home fans, unless it's a situation where it's a team you're battling with for playoff position as the season winds down and you need to get a win against that team. And it's more important that that's the game that the star player will play, and then they'll play the inferior, they'll sit rather against the inferior opponent. But is that a problem for the league that they have all these back-to-backs and the star players, for the most part, aren't going to play in those back-to-backs because of load management?
It may be a problem for the league, but it doesn't bother me at all.
It doesn't bother you?
You know what? When it first started happening, remember Greg Popovich was the one that made it famous, right? He's sitting Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker in the same game.
Yeah, he doesn't even spread it out. But he just gives up a game.
But he was doing that when the Sixers were going through the process. And even though back in the day when the Sixers were going through the process, I was here doing the highlights, so I watched every single game. On nights when I wasn't here working, I was watching the big teams. I was watching the Spurs, and then I'm getting screwed out of being able to see these guys play. But now that I understand more so why he's doing it, because we do have Joel Embiid. I mean, I wouldn't mind if Ben Simmons started sitting games, right? Because we see how much energy this guy has and how much athleticism he has come playoff time. Imagine if he didn't play 80 games. Imagine if he only played 70 games and the amount of energy that he can have come playoff time. I think now that I know why Popovich was doing it, more so because it affects me more and my team, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I understand why they do it. And the playoffs, you know, I'm kind of speaking out of both sides of my mouth, because the playoffs are what matters. You get yourself in position in the regular season to have as many rounds as you can on your home court, because it means something in the NBA. That's clear. And if you have to rest guys during the season, though, I mean, to me, if I'm a season ticket holder of the Sixers, and, you know, when we lay all the tickets on the table and I split them with a guy, I want to choose teams to do our lottery or our draft picks for opponents. I want to see, like, when Golden State comes in. But if Golden State comes in and there's no Steph Curry and no Kevin Durant, then that's not that attractive.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You don't see that often. You see it when the Sixers are playing the Hawks or when the Sixers are playing the Cavaliers, when they sit their guys because they think that their team's good enough to beat that other team. And sometimes it doesn't happen. Remember, the Sixers lost to the Bulls twice in a row. They lost to the Hawks twice this season. So sometimes
early in the season?
Yeah, sometimes it hurts them when they sit their guys against these teams. But for the most part, it's not because the Warriors are in town and they're going to sit Embiid and the Warriors are going to sit Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. You don't really see that when it's marquee matchups.
How many back-to-backs did the Sixers have this year? I got to figure that out, because, you know, if I'm looking at, like, the biggest issue in the NBA, and there's some things that the NBA, I think, does better than any league, and I'll tell you about that in a second. But to me, all the back-to-backs are an issue. Now, are they going to take games off the schedule? Are they going to lop 20 games off the NBA schedule? No, because that's revenue, it's gate revenue. And that's never going to happen, plus it's TV, and it's content, and they're never going to do that. But could they lengthen their regular season so they don't have as many back-to-backs? I don't know that that's an option either, because the season's already tremendously long. But if I'm looking for the biggest issue in the NBA, it's that star players and load management aren't going to play in all 82 games. And if they were spread out, maybe they would play more. I don't know what the answer and the fix is to the problem, but I think it's an issue.
Well, I know the NBA schedule. I'm trying to find the answer that you have for how many back-to-backs the Sixers had this year. I know the NBA planned to have less back-to-backs this year.
Yeah, they started earlier this year.
There were less back-to-backs this season than ever before. Mm. But the thing is, they're still going to find a way to give them days off you know, to rest. It's just like baseball, right? Like, the catcher has the fifth day. JT Realmuto's not in the starting lineup today. So basically, every 5 days, Realmuto's going to get a day off. No matter how bad your backup catcher is, you're going to do that. And with the NBA, even though they have more days off than a Major League Baseball season, they're still going to find the days to sit their guys, no matter whether there's a back-to-back or not.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.